Well, today's the last day of November 30th of 2008, and Jana Hubler, one of our world missionaries, is here from Macau, China. So, Jana, you want to come and share with us, please?
Thank you. Good morning. It's great to be back with you this morning, and share my Thanksgiving with you, too. I always have to say thanks at the beginning, because once I get excited talking about China, then I might forget, but I'm mainly here because I want to say thank you for your support financially and through prayer. A lot of my missionary friends right now are struggling with their support levels just because of all the stuff happening economically, but mine has really stayed steady, and I just thank you for that because it's a whole thing I don't have to worry about, and it's a lot more fun to go around to churches saying thank you than to go around to churches asking for money. So I've been enjoying that while I've been back in the States. I came back at the end of September, and we'll be here to the end of March. I'm on a six-month break, and I'm in the middle of a lot of transition over in Macau, so it's a good time to come and share with you what all God is doing. The really Thanksgiving part is that some of our dreams in Macau have come true. When the UBs first started work there in the late 80s, the goal was to establish local churches that would be self-supporting. And we're at a point now where we have two churches that are healthy, self-supporting. They're financially supporting their own pastors full-time. And they have local Christians who are taking leadership, have local boards that are making the decisions about the churches. And that's really exciting to see. It's been a long process, but it's been exciting to get to that point. A few years ago, Hong Kong Conference really decided they didn't want to keep planting more and more and more churches. They felt like, especially in Hong Kong, they've kind of gotten their resources spread really thin and decided that focusing on building fewer, stronger churches and then doing outreach through them was more of the strategy that they wanted to pursue. And so because of that, we're not really looking in Macau right now at planting more and more and more churches, but looking at, okay, these churches are steady, and what can we do through these churches? So that's been really exciting. The other part of it for me, though, has been, okay, so what's next? My heart has always really been, when we got to that point, to leave. There are other missionaries who are going to be staying in Macau. Jennifer Blandon is planning to stay, and she's going to be working with Living Stone Church, which has ended up being a bilingual congregation. We do everything in English and in Cantonese. So I just was writing to some of my friends last night, and I said, you know, it's kind of boring to go to service that's only in one language, like where's the other language? But complicates things a little bit when you're planning all the music and sermon and everything else in two languages. But we have a lot of families who are mixes, some a local Macau person married maybe to someone from Singapore or someone from Korea or different things like that, and their children are kind of in the middle. So it's ended up just working best for us to do things bilingually. So Jen Blandon will continue working alongside the church, doing a lot of the English track of ministry there. David and Melissa Klein are also still in Macau. They just had a new baby boy about 2 weeks ago, so I'm kind of missing my team, wishing I could be there to ooh and ah over him myself. But they are continuing to work in Macau and trying to establish a broader youth ministry that goes beyond what just the churches are doing, but reaches out more into the schools in Macau. But like I said, for me, my heart has been, okay, once the locals are leading the churches, then it's time for me to move on and let the Holy Spirit do his thing among them. So a few years ago, I started, I could kind of see, I didn't realize really it would be this quick, but thought, yeah, the next 5-10 years, we're probably going to get to that point, and I wonder what's next. And one day I went into mainland China, just across the border from Macau, and had lunch with some education officials there. Some of you might remember in my early years in Macau, I did some teaching across the border in some high schools. And at that point, we really weren't sure where it was going to lead, but we just saw it was an open door that God was giving us. So we did that. Eventually, we didn't have enough staff to continue the teaching, but we have kept the relationships with folks over there. So I went over and I was having lunch with them. And one of these women, she's like in charge of the primary English education in the district or something. And she's a Christian, but her husband is not, and he's a Chinese philosophy professor. And as we were having lunch together, he started asking me about how Christianity and Chinese philosophy go together or don't go together and those kinds of questions. And it was a really mixed moment for me. On the one hand, it was so exciting because, like, this is the conversation I've been waiting to have for like 15 years. I mean, we went through so much formality and so much not being able to speak openly about our faith, having to be really cautious. That is still true, but in general, if they initiate the conversation, there's more freedom there to talk about your faith. And so he was initiating the conversation, which was great. So it was really a neat moment for me saying, I can't believe this is happening. The frustrating part for me was that his first language is Mandarin, because most of mainland China, they're Mandarin speakers, and I do Cantonese because that's what they do in Macau. And he can do some Cantonese, but like just when he would get to like the really good part, he would switch back to his first language because that's what you do when you get to the really good part. And so I ended up being in this conversation and really not being able to even nod my head at anything because it's like, okay, I know he's talking about Jesus and Confucius and Buddha, but I'm not sure what he's saying about which one, so I'm really afraid to even nod yes or nod no here. So, but that day, I look back now and God was calling me that day. There was that day I thought, you know, when the churches are ready to be on their own in Macau, I would love to come back here and really have time to invest in these relationships that God has protected all of these years, but we've never really had time to really devote to developing those relationships and sharing our faith with them. When I came back on furlough last time, I went to the Global Ministries leadership team meeting, and sort of out of the blue, one of them just asked me, okay, if eventually we don't need missionaries in Macau anymore, what would you want to do? Would you want to move back to the States? I was like, no, how boring is that? And I was like, I want to go somewhere else. And so I said, well, one idea I've had would be to go back into mainland China and pursue these relationships we've had all these years. Well, after that meeting, Luke Fetters, who used to be a missionary in Macau, and he's the leader of that team, he came up to me and he said, Jana, tomorrow I'm presenting a proposal that we reinitiate work that we were doing in mainland China. And Luke and I hadn't talked, we had talked a lot while I'd been back on furlough, but we hadn't ever talked about that. So it was a real confirmation to me that God was leading that direction. So you may have heard over the last couple of years, Huntington University has sent teams to mainland China during July to do some English teacher training. And this past summer, I was able to do that together with them. And then when I go back at the end of March, we're negotiating things now. We would like for me to be in a position as an English education consultant just across the border there in China and be able to do some teacher training together with the same connections we already have. And I'd also like to be teaching in a couple of the high schools and primary schools because I feel like a real strength of our teacher training is if we really understand the situation the teachers there are in, which is quite different than the situation of teachers in the States. So that's what we would like to happen. It's very much a faith walk because, in Macau, we've had religious freedom. That's been a big thing. And also in Macau, because we ran our own English program, we made most of the big decisions. In mainland, it's more waiting for an invitation from them and then trying to kind of negotiate out how everything will work out, so we aren't in control of things, but that's probably good because God is. And so that's kind of what we're working towards. I will be keeping my apartment in Macau at least for the first year because right now I'm the only person who'll be there full-time focusing in China, and so I'll be going back to Macau for church and team support and those kinds of things. So that's kind of the plan, as many of the details as I know. If God reveals any more details to you than he has to me, please let me know because I would love more details, but I don't have them yet, and that's okay. But I think one of the challenges for me then has been, okay, so I'm moving out of this role in Macau where I've been very openly a missionary and openly sharing my faith, and I can, whatever, give people literature, invite them to church, hold a special evangelistic meeting, whatever I want to do. And now I'm headed into a situation where I don't have that freedom and where my best opportunity to share my faith is if people ask me about it, which means they have to see something in my life that would cause them to want to ask some questions about my faith. And this summer, as I participated in this three-week camp, we lived with Chinese families. And that was actually, I'd never done that for 3 weeks before, because in Macau I've always had my own apartment. So that was an experience for me in itself. They did not have a Western toilet, so that was also an experience for me in itself. But they took very, 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 very good care of us. Chinese are extremely hospitable people. They want to anticipate every need you might possibly have and meet it before you even realized you had it. And so they just wait on you hand and foot all the time. And I had to laugh because it was extremely hot. It's very hot in southern China in July. It was like in the 90s, and humidity is in the 90s. So, and Chinese, they don't sweat very much. Like, must be a genetic thing. I don't know. But Americans do. And so that was kind of our joke the whole time, because we were just sweating bullets and they weren't. But they were always, I laughed because every day when I would get back to the family I was staying with, the mom would be like, "Oh, Jana, it's so hot, it's so hot." And then she'd be like, "I made some hot soup for you." Because Chinese think that cold drinks are like a bad shock to your system when you're very hot, so it's much healthier to drink something hot. They're probably right, but I still prefer a cold Coke. But I would dutifully drink my soup, because I know Chinese mothers show that they love their children by making soup for them every day. And it's like a several-hour process that they cook the soup that's really good for you. So I was very healthy at the end of those 3 weeks. As I was thinking about, okay, what is it in our lives that would make them ask about this hope that lies within us? I thought a lot about Daniel. I've always been challenged by his testimony in the Bible. When his coworkers were trying to find, you know, some way to get him in trouble. And in Daniel 6, verses 4 and 5, it says that this, the administrators tried to find grounds for charges against Daniel in his conduct of government affairs, but they were unable to do so. They could find no corruption in him, because he was trustworthy and neither corrupt nor negligent. Finally, these men said, "We will never find any basis for charges against this man Daniel unless it has something to do with the law of his God." And I think especially just coming off of the whole election thing, which I was actually kind of thankful to only be here for 1 month of it. But, I mean, if people want to dig up dirt about people, they find something, right? I mean, it's amazing. Here he was, a government worker, and they were trying to find something bad about him, and they could find nothing except for his faith to, as anything to be able to get in trouble for. And, his integrity spoke so strongly to them. And I was reminded of that at the end of this camp that we did this summer, because they had a big banquet to thank us, which is what Chinese always do. They have a big banquet, and they try to order lots of special food so that you know that you were appreciated. So it might be whatever, silkworms or eel or a variety of different special foods to say thank you. And then they always have someone who stands up and gives a speech. And so this was a top education communist official from southern China who gave the speech of thanks to us. And it was interesting because he himself had not been at the camp that we were doing at all. So I knew anything specific that he said, he had to have heard back from the people who were working directly with us. And he named three things in his speech that he appreciated about our team. And I think they've challenged me. What are the things that people are looking for in our lives as Christians that they would notice that would make them say, you know, there's something different about those people? And I know it's a situation most of you are in your jobs here. It's that same thing. And the first thing that he said that they appreciated was our professionalism. And I think basically he was referring to our integrity. You know, these days in missions, there's so many places in the world that you can't just go in as a missionary. You have to go in as a teacher, as a business person, as a medical worker, whatever. And I think often there's a temptation to say, like, okay, well, I said I'm a teacher and that got me my visa, but that's not really what I'm here for. But I think our integrity and our jobs is really important. I think it's something that speaks very strongly to non-Christians. And I think, I know the teams from Huntington University, you know, the people who are doing actual teacher training are professors from the university or teachers who've had years of experience. Other people who come along on the team help with just giving, like, English conversation practice to people that you're qualified for with or without educational training. But we've been very, very committed to delivering what we tell them we will deliver to them. And if that's a quality English teacher training camp for their teachers, we want to do that part very quality. And no, it's not our number one goal, but we want to do that very well. And so, and I think that's true in all of our jobs. The way that we do our jobs speaks to people. And if we are committed to doing it with integrity, people will notice. The second thing that he mentioned that they appreciated was our hard work. And it was, like I said, it was so hot, you know, and they kept apologizing. We're sorry, it's so hot. I think they thought we were going to die because we were, like, sweating so much, and they didn't know what to do about that. And we were like, it's okay. If your teachers teach in these conditions, we're happy to teach in these conditions. It's not going to slow us down. We're going to, you know, we're still here to do what we're here to do. And one of the guys from the States, I had to laugh one day. He was teaching some of the primary students, and a kid raised his hand. And he bent over. He said, I bent over to help him, and, like, sweat just poured off of his forehead and onto this child and got him all wet. And he was like, it was so gross, and all I could do was give him a tissue to wipe himself off. Like, so he was like, after that, I always made sure, wipe your forehead and then bend over to help the child. And wipe your forehead again and then bend over to help the next child. But they were watching. You know, they were watching that we were working hard and not complaining about the situation. And then one day, we did every day have an hour break after lunch. Chinese have a wonderful tradition of taking a nap after lunch. So they would all go back to their hotels and houses and whatever and take a nap. And we teachers would have like an hour in an air-conditioned teacher's lounge that was kind of our downtime as a team for the day and really the only time we were all together since we were staying in different homes. Well, one day, one of the leaders of our team, he was doing an activity with some students that afternoon, and he needed a big mat for it. And he had a big piece of plastic, but for some reason, a mat was going to work better than the piece of plastic. And so he went out during that break. Instead of taking a break, he basically went out shopping downtown in this little Chinese town we were in to try to find a big mat. And to be honest, most of us were like, take a break, like the mat, the plastic, what's the big difference, you know? But at that banquet, at the end of the 3 weeks, this top Chinese official guy who hadn't even been at the camp, he said, I heard that one day, during the hottest part of the day, when you guys could have been taking your break, one of your teachers went out and spent that time shopping to make an activity better quality for our students, and we were deeply impressed by that. And, you know, it was a case where he went the extra mile, and people noticed. We didn't even know anyone was watching. You often don't know anyone's watching in China, but they are. But anyway, we didn't know anyone other than us Americans knew anything about it, but they had noticed that he went out, and he did kind of went the extra mile, and it really deeply impressed them that we were willing to do that for their students. And that's hard to do in your day-to-day job. I mean, it's one thing on a short-term trip where you're just focused on that one thing and that's really all you're there for. But to maintain that kind of integrity and hard work in your daily job, that's the real challenge, I think, in the middle of the daily grind of things. Well, when this man gave his third point, I almost started crying because he said, the thing that has most deeply impressed us about your group is the love that they have shown for our teachers and our students. He said, you have treated our students as though they were your own children, and we don't understand that. And right away, two different Bible verses popped in my mind. One is, and they will know you're Christians by your love. The other is from Thessalonians, and Paul's talking about his experiences as a missionary, and he says, you know, we tried not to be a burden among you, but to be gentle among you, like a mother caring for her children. And I wanted to, like, shout, like, that's it. Like, it's the Holy Spirit. He's the one making the difference in our lives. You're seeing it. But I kept my mouth shut, which is probably a good idea at that particular time. And but that's why I'm anxious to go back, because I want to be able to share with them. There's a reason for that. There's a reason that you see something different in this group of people. And it was actually almost amusing, because throughout the 3 weeks, different ones of us had time to talk to different, different teachers. And some of them kind of started discovering that some of us were Christians. And we met a few teachers who were Christians or some who were really seeking for God. And finally, somebody was talking to Jeff Bleierveld, who's the new director of Global Ministries and was on this team. And he said, you know, it seems like there are a lot of Christians on this team that you guys brought over. And so Jeff was like, well, let's see. Yeah, I think Jana's a Christian. Yeah, Luke Fetters, I'm pretty sure he's a Christian. I'm a Christian. Yeah, there are a lot of Christians on this team, aren't there? But they were seeing, they were noticing something different, and that was the exciting part. And so, it's a challenge to all of us. Like I said, the daily grind is much different than a short-term trip. You don't get a big banquet every 3 weeks at your job to tell you how wonderful you are and how much they appreciate everything that you did over the last 3 weeks. No special food or silkworms or anything to say thank you. But I think people do notice when we maintain our testimony and our integrity for Christ. They really do notice, and it does make them wonder, where's that from? There's something different there. So I do ask you to pray for me as I head back at the end of March. Like I said, a lot of details still being worked out. On the U.S. side, Huntington University will be working with Global Ministries as my sponsoring organization, because Global Ministries isn't a real good sponsoring organization to have if I'm in mainland. And just a lot of things that are still being worked out on both sides, but I'm confident that God's in it. I see him opening doors little by little by little. I am usually excited about it. I'm occasionally scared, like, what am I getting myself into? But pray that God will make the way clear, and that will really have an impact on teachers, both encouraging Christians who are there who have very few resources available to them, and also sharing our faith with a lot of Chinese who I think are really hungry for the truth right now. Thank you.